This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, November 14th, 2012. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, Israel launches a major military attack on Gaza, killing a top military leader and a number of civilians. Workers across Europe go on strike to protest austerity measures. We'll take you to the streets of Spain. And we'll look at what Congress is debating as they return to Washington, including a cybersecurity bill. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. An Israeli airstrike killed Hamas's top military leader today. More Israeli airstrikes followed, leaving a number of people dead and scores of others injured. Hamas has reportedly fired back into Israel and is preparing for war. FSRN's Rami Almagari reports from Gaza.
The Israeli army says it killed Hamas's top military leader, Ahmed al-Jabri. Al-Jabri was riding in a car in Gaza City when an Israeli drone destroyed the vehicle. The airstrike kicked off a new offensive on the Gaza Strip, Israel is calling Operation Pillar of Defense. The military says it is targeting Gaza-based armed groups and weapons stores across the territory, but civilian casualties are already mounting. The assassination of al-Jabri was followed by at least more 20 Israeli airstrikes this evening, killing a number of Palestinians in different areas. Among those killed is a four-year-old girl in southern Gaza City. Medics say more than 25 others were injured. Israel accuses al-Jabri of orchestrating militant attacks for more than a decade. It also says he was behind the abduction of Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit in June 2006. Shalit was swapped for 1,000 Palestinian prisoners in October 2011. Dr. Mukhaymer Abu Seda is a Gaza-based political analyst.
It seems to me that the ball is in Hamas' court right now. If Hamas retaliate with long-range missiles against Israel as a result of this assassination, it will definitely provoke Israel into more offensive operations, which might lead to a ground operation against Gaza.
Indeed, the Israeli army posted a social media today that, quote, all options are on the table, and that, if necessary, Israel will initiate a ground operation in Gaza. Hamas and other Gaza-based armed groups vowed to retaliate. Meanwhile, Israeli media reports the Israeli army is beefing up forces along the Gaza-Israel border. Rami Almighari, FSRN, Gaza.
Hamas has begun its retaliation, firing several rockets into Israel, according to the IDF. A shopping center has been hit, but no casualties have been reported. In Nigeria, lawmakers in the House of Representatives have advanced a bill that would criminalize public displays of affection between same-sex couples and ban gay marriage. FSRN Samuel Okocha reports from Lagos.
Last year, Nigeria's Senate approved the bill making same-sex marriages punishable by up to 14 years in prison for the couple and 10 years for anyone supporting such unions. A 10-year sentence was also prescribed for any person making public show of same-sex romantic relationships. Earlier this week, the anti-gay bill sailed through a second reading in Nigeria's lower parliament following a unanimous vote. Under the proposal, LGBT organizations would also be made illegal. A clause-by-clause review will take place before the lawmakers vote on the bill. Gays and lesbians in Africa's most populous country are at greater risk of contracting HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases because of discrimination, which makes it difficult to seek counseling and treatment. In addition, the prohibition of same-sex unions and ban on advocacy groups means members of Nigeria's LGBT community will continue to hide their sexual orientation in order to avoid discrimination and punishment. Samuel Okocha, FSRN, Lagos.
For the first time, the UN is calling access to contraception a universal human right. In a report released today, the group says allowing women access to family planning in developing countries would save them more than $11 billion per year. It also found countries that ignore this right invite poverty, health problems, and gender inequality. The UN Population Fund attributes the substantial portion of economic growth in Asia to access to contraception. The European Union's executive approved a proposal today to even up the gender gap in the boardrooms of European companies, but the measure may lack teeth. From the UK, Tom Allen reports for FSRN.
The directive adopted by the European Commission will require publicly listed companies to have 40% female board members by 2020. It's been championed by Viviane Reding, Commissioner for Justice, Citizenship and Fundamental Rights.
After decades of empty promises and failed attempts for self-regulation, we still have an 85% male quota on the boards of Europe's largest companies. Women only make 15%. Now, this is a waste of talent when you think that 60% of the university graduates are female. And that is why the Commission is taking action.
However, the proposals have been watered down after opposition by European member states, led by the United Kingdom. As a result, it will be left up to individual nation states to decide whether or not to impose sanctions on companies that miss the target. Tom Allen, FSRN, Edinburgh.
And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Despite an agreement mediated by Egypt to stop the violence, the Israeli military launched a barrage of strikes on Gaza today, assassinating a top Hamas military leader and killing civilians, including children. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke in a televised address.
Today, in a very accurate way, we hit the Hamas targets and also the rockets which are attacking Israel, we have hit.
Translation from Al Jazeera. Israeli officials say their offensive is a widespread campaign called Operation Pillar of Defense and published a video of the strike that killed Hamas military chief Ahmed al-Jabari. Israeli military spokesperson Avital Leibovich said the attack is justified because of Hamas rocket fire into Israel.
We went on Operation Pillar of Defense in order to first and foremost defend the people of Israel. I'm speaking of 1 million Israelis that are currently living within the range of the rockets, and this situation must be stopped. Ahmed Jabari is a terrorist that has blood, Israeli blood on his hands, was involved in many terror activities against Israelis, and this is why he was targeted in the car this afternoon. We will continue this operation as long as we need in order to defend the people of Israel.
Gazans reported military strikes throughout the evening following the attack on al-Jabari's car and many injuries. Residents posting to social media described warships firing from the water and drones flying overhead. Photos posted online allegedly show a 1- and 4-year-old killed in the attacks. For more, we're joined by FSRN's Rami Al-Maghari. Rami, tell us where you are right now.
Doreen, I'm right now in my home in the central Gaza Strip, where I do my work, actually. And I have been following up on the news since the evening, the afternoon, actually, when the Israelis started their operations against Gaza by targeting a top Hamas military leader, which I reported on already for FSRN today. And here I am. I just can't close my eyes to have some sort of rest or sleep, because it's really insane. And the Israeli strikes are continuing in the region on different parts of Gaza Strip, including the hometown of Maghazi, where I live right now. The population are just getting afraid of more intensity of Israeli attacks to come in the upcoming hours. That is the main. Those are the main concerns of the people. Maybe you have just heard an explosion. You can listen to.
Yeah,
me.
I can hear in the background. Describe what just happened.
I am just putting my recorder on. Yeah, it is a very, very more tense more tense about the three strikes right now while I'm talking to you, actually. Three air strikes just occurred. That is apparent, actually. Some youth are just in the corner, in the neighborhood, just watching very, very carefully what's going on, just sticking to their homes, which to the front doors of their homes. And this is a sort of a very tense night that the people cannot have rest, cannot sleep, and they are worried, they are scared that there is something larger will happen, possibly in the next few hours or the next few days, a reminder of the war that Israel launched in 2009.
Rami, it's now evening there, and as you describe the strikes that you can hear in the background in the area, how are people there doing? Have you spoken to your neighbors, other people in the area?
Actually, the people are just, I have just been talking to some people, and they are very, very concerned about the situation. This is, as I told you, a reminder for them of the Catholic operation 3 years ago in 2009, in January 2009, or late 2008, and through the January 2009. This is a sort of a reminder to them of the situation by then. And they are concerned that situation is escalating and the people the people's situation will get worse than ever, because the people here have been hardly rehabilitating out of the very large scale attack that Israel launched in 2009. So now they have a sort of a big fear about what Israel is trying to do, whether it is going to have to carry out a larger scale attack on them, similar to that of 2009, or not, which means a lot for the population here, which means a lot of sadness, a lot of sorrow, a lot of suffering in terms of the casualties, in terms of the destruction of their infrastructure that is rehabilitating for about 3 years now.
That's FSRN reporter Rami Almagari giving us an update from Gaza. Rami, thank you very much, and take care there.
You are welcome, Duran.
Across Europe today, tens of thousands of public workers staged anti-austerity strikes in nearly two dozen countries. Workers say the spending cuts and tax raises imposed on citizens are hurting chances for a recovery. Spain and Portugal held their first ever coordinated general strike, which was Spain's second this year. In Spain alone, more than 700 flights were canceled. But many question how effective the strike can be. Workers from one public institution on the cutting block, Madrid Hospitals, said they don't want their message confused with that of the protesters. From Madrid, FSRN's Robert Downs reports.
In a metro station just a few stops from Madrid center, about 100 chanting metro workers loaded themselves onto already packed trains. Transportation strikes across the country reduced public transit to about 30% of its regular capacity. Starting early in the morning, the roving band of workers descended on the busiest metro stations in Madrid during rush hour. They delayed departures, threw confetti onto the tracks, and urged onlookers to join them in their fight against the government's austerity measures. Susan Garcia Brown is half Spanish, half British, and works for the metro. She was part of the group.
So what is it like when this entire group gets onto a metro car?
Like sardines in a tin.
And so what do people say when they see you getting on?
There's all sorts of different opinions. Some people are with us because it affects everybody. It affects school children, it affects hospitals, it affects old people, everybody. And other people get angry. Some people insult you, some people say they have a right to work. They have a right to work, but we have a right to defend our rights as well.
Although not everyone agrees on whether the general strike is a good idea, the two largest labor unions in the country say that it's necessary. Firefighters, teachers, transport workers, and many others are protesting austerity measures that they say are crippling the country. Workers complain that they've had no say in pay cuts, labor reforms, tax increases, and other controversial measures taken by the government. Unemployment has risen to more than 25%, and until recently, more than 500 people a day were being evicted from their homes. some of those facing eviction committed suicide. Many question how effective the strike can actually be. Since the first general strike in March, the economy has only gotten worse, and cuts have become more severe. And besides general demands, not many of the protesters can offer alternatives. But that's not the case for many doctors and medical workers here in Madrid. Their problem is new, and it's more specific. More importantly, they say it has a clearer solution. 2 weeks ago, the president of the province of Madrid announced that starting in 2013, every hospital in the city and the surrounding communities will be privatized, or at least become semi-private. Many are concerned that this transition to privatized healthcare in Madrid could be a litmus test for the country as a whole. That's why many doctors and nurses here aren't interested in lumping in their message with that of the general strike. They're protesting outside their hospitals every day. Outside of La Princesa University Hospital last Thursday, hundreds of workers gathered to protest. This general hospital is the main center of care for about 300,000 madrileños. But the government of Madrid announced that next year it would become a geriatric hospital for patients 75 and older. This would cut costs by eliminating specialized positions. Dr. José María Álvaro Gracia is a physician at La Princesa and the coordinator of the Biological Therapies Unit, which uses proteins, antibodies, and other treatments to aid failing immune systems. His unit is an expensive part of the hospital's budget and would likely be slimmed down or eliminated in the switch to geriatric care. He said the general strike is a good way for the country to voice its outrage, but not for the hospitals.
I'm afraid that despite doing this general strike, we're not going to be able to solve the economical situation, the economical problem of the country. But I am sure that if we make people understand which is the problem of this hospital, we're going to be able to stop it, and we're going to be able to change it.
He said that if the government wants to make the hospital more efficient, that's fine. He and his colleagues welcome the chance to offer their ideas.
Just in the last 2 years, we have been able to cut something like 20% of our expending in this type of drugs, and we are treating with the same quality a 10% greater amount of patients. Of course we can do things.
On Monday, the hospital workers scored a major victory. The demonstrations and a petition drive put so much heat on the local government that it agreed to keep La Princesa a general hospital. The strike in Spain is organized with its neighbor Portugal, and there are also partner strikes in other EU countries, including Italy, Greece, and France. But they might not succeed in stopping more cuts, especially since the Spanish government is trying to avoid a bailout from the EU and the European Central Bank. In order to avoid it, leaders would need to enact more cuts and tax raises. Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy insists that a bailout is not necessary, but is keeping the option open.
When I think that asking for a bailout is good for Spanish interests, I'll ask for it. Meanwhile, I won't. What I find most relevant is that this instrument exists.
Ahead of the general strike, the national government tried to ease tensions among upset citizens. This week, Prime Minister Rajoy announced a plan to halt evictions for people that have fallen behind on their mortgage payments. Since the recession began here 5 years ago, about 400,000 homes have been foreclosed. Robert Downs, FSRN, Madrid.
Join Free Speech Radio News on Friday, November 23rd, for a special program, Rising Tides, Rising Voices, Climate Change and the New Reality.
And those emissions are destroying the planet, and you see it in China, and you see it in El Salvador, and you see it in Peru, and now you see it in New York.
We are beginning to see some opening up in terms of disclosure about what is really going on, about how much resources are being taken, how much is being spent. So there's hope that things will begin to change.
We are all aware that time is ticking, and we are quickly running out.
Rising Tides, Rising Voices, Climate Change and the New Reality, a special half-hour program. That's Friday, November 23rd, here on FSRN. In Washington, D.C. today, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate reelected their party leaders and laid out their policy priorities for the short term before the holidays. Both sides have also been angling for the allegiance of newly elected independent Senator Angus King from Maine, who only made a decision after learning that remaining completely neutral would cut him out of the committee process.
And so I have decided to affiliate myself with the Democratic caucus, because doing so will allow me to take independent positions on issues as they arise, and at the same time will allow me to be an effective representative of the people of Maine.
King noted that the only two independent senators currently serving in Congress, Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, also caucus with the Democrats. With the membership and leadership of the Senate hammered out, lawmakers are getting down to business. But with the Farm Bill, Defense Authorization Act, Violence Against Women Act, Hurricane Sandy Disaster Aid, and U.S. Postal Service Rescue Bill still left incomplete, the Senate is using its first days back in session to consider the Sportsman's Act, which allows for more hunting and fishing on public land. Lawmakers are scheduled to consider a cybersecurity bill next, which has privacy and civil liberties advocates concerned. On Capitol Hill, FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid announced he's planning to bring one of President Obama's priority bills up for a vote, a cybersecurity measure that would facilitate more information sharing between private companies and the government. The Senate rejected the same bill in August after some Republicans said it would put too much pressure on businesses and some Democrats said it would violate users' privacy. Those lawmakers, including Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden, remain concerned about increasing government access to personal consumer data.
I've made it clear that I think, for example, to ignore privacy issues as it relates to the cloud, given the growth that we're seeing in that area, would be a big mistake. So that, ensuring that social media, you know, doesn't get harmed in the course of, you know, the cyber bill, those are the issues I'm interested in. I mean, I'm a privacy hawk, but I believe that it's possible to strike a balance, particularly because I'm on the Intelligence Committee, to fighting terror relentlessly and still being sensitive to people's personal liberties.
Wyden had previously threatened to put a hold on the bill, but he now says he's waiting to see what amendments, if any, are considered. Since it was first introduced in the spring, there have been several key changes to the bill that Michelle Richardson with the American Civil Liberties Union says make it better than the version passed by the Republican-controlled House.
They made sure that when companies share cybersecurity information, that they share it with civilian agencies instead of military ones. Competing proposals, for example, in the House, the bill called CISPA, will allow these companies that hold our very private information to give it directly to the NSA and DOD. Another change that they made in the Senate bill is a requirement that these companies make a reasonable effort to take out personally identifiable information before they turn it over, so that they're not sharing unnecessary private details that could be used to trace back this information to you, the consumer, unless it's absolutely necessary to respond to an actual cyber threat.
But Richardson and some lawmakers, including Kentucky Republican Rand Paul, say many troubling provisions from the original bill haven't yet been addressed.
You know, one of the proposals is to give the internet companies immunity, but when you give people immunity, that means they don't care about honoring my contract. The only way to have privacy is to have a corporation say they're not going to reveal my information, but if they have immunity for revealing my information, they're most likely going to reveal my information. So I don't want anything that has any kind of immunity in it. I think that's a big mistake.
A report from Google released this week shows that this kind of information sharing is already taking place. In the first half of 2012, U.S. government agencies made nearly 8,000 requests for user information from Gmail, search histories, Google Docs, and other Google products, a 26% jump from the previous 6 months. In total, U.S. officials asked for information from more than 16,000 accounts over those 6 months, more than any other government in the world. Richardson says the Google report proves that the U.S. government doesn't need more ways to access private data.
There are many ways for the government to request information from companies already, through criminal and foreign intelligence investigations. There's different ways to subpoena the information, to get warrants, to make informal requests in emergency situations. There are really a lot of ways to already get this information.
If the Senate does pass the bill, the differences between it and the House's more invasive CISPA version would have to be worked out in conference. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington.
In Wisconsin, a controversial state law weakening union rights for public workers faces another legal challenge. A union representing state police officers filed a lawsuit in Madison on Tuesday, charging that the law violates the state's constitution. FSRN's Molly Stentz has more.
Governor Scott Walker's law cutting bargaining rights for public workers launched massive protests at the state capitol last year. While neither the street protests nor the recall elections stopped the law, it has been blocked by the courts. The law's already been struck down once this year. In September, the Madison Teachers Union won a lawsuit that rendered parts of the law unconstitutional. This means that local school boards could again bargain with employee unions. That suit only applied to local municipal workers. This new lawsuit seeks to have the law struck down for state employees. It was filed by the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Association, a union that represents state troopers, Capitol Police, and University of Wisconsin Police. Sally Sticks is an attorney representing the union.
We are, again, under the Wisconsin Constitution, arguing that the Act 10 is unconstitutional as applied to our bargaining unit.
The law exempted certain law enforcement officers who got to keep their bargaining rights. And that's the crux of the argument, that the state treated similar groups of workers differently, which they didn't have the right to do under law. One of the plaintiffs in the case is James Brooks, a Capitol Police officer. He says that officers in his union don't understand why some police officers can bargain for better pay and working conditions, but they can't. He wants his union back.
Our union would be ecstatic if we could come back as we were, virtually made whole. That is certainly the outcome that we look forward to.
Lawyers for the case expect that it could take months before there's a ruling from a circuit court judge. Molly Stentz, FSRN, Madison.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our theme music was composed and produced for FSRN by Alan Weatherhead. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.